1-1 pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field, way up there, way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eighth strikeout for the King tonight, and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager! That just happened! Thank you very much!
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
And welcome back to this Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast, the official podcast of the Seattle Mariners. Gary Hill here. Thanks for coming along once again. Matt, we have a giant podcast for you in this one. This one is big, and I create each podcast, so I try not to favor one over another, but I may have to like this one over some of the others. This is tremendous. So here's what we have in this podcast. You're going to hear from Hall of Famer Don Sutton. Wait till you hear what he says about Felix Hernandez. And he alludes to him walking down the same path in his career that Don Sutton did. So wait till you hear what he has to say after watching Felix Hernandez pitch in the first game of the series against Atlanta. Of course, we're going to break down the game yesterday against the Braves, Day Baseball. So that's on its way. I'm going to play you a Lloyd McClendon clip that I thought was pretty interesting, something he said before the ball game yesterday. And if it holds true, watch out. Could be a fun ride down the stretch. Ryan Divish from the Seattle Times, he's a guest. That's a conversation that's going to come up. And also, you're going to get to be the first ones to hear what I've put together for this weekend. Guinea pig's too strong of a word. I don't think guinea pig is the right word, but you get a chance to give me some feedback before this airs. It's my tribute to Lou Piniella. You know I celebrate things through montage. It's going to be played this weekend to celebrate Lou Piniella going into the Hall of Fame on Saturday. You get a sneak preview of the Lou Piniella montage. So I want to hear your thoughts about it too. So all that on today's podcast. This is very exciting. It was exciting yesterday at Safeco Field. Day Baseball, it was spectacular out as the Mariners trying to break out the mini brooms to sweep aside the Atlanta Braves. The Mariners really got off and rolling early in this one, wasting no time. Jumping on one of the best pitchers in the National League this year, Kyle Seager, driving in a run early.
The 0-1 to Seager, swinging a line drive into right field, drops in front of Hayward for a base hit. Rounding third, heading home is Eckley. The throw to second, Cano the turn, dives back to the bag at second. Kyle Seager with an RBI single with two outs, drives in Eckley.
So run early for the M's, 1-0 lead early on. Meanwhile, Chris Young, the first two innings, He looked very comfortable here at Safeco Field. He's been that way all season long, just thrown out of a rocking chair early on.
Here's the next offer. Curve. Strike three called. Chris Johnson caught looking. Another 1-2-3 inning for Chris Young, and that is strikeout number three already, as Young has retired the first six batters he has faced this afternoon.
But his role would come to an end quickly in the third inning. It was stamped by Freddie Freeman, who knocked a double, drove in two, and put a stamp on a three-run inning for the Braves.
Young comes home, swinging a shot towards left center field. This finds the alley, and it will do some serious damage. Pena scores. Bonifacio's right behind him. Bonifacio is waving, and LaStella, here's a throw, the tag, and they got him. LaStella's out at home on a cannon of a throw in to Jesus Sucre, who leaves his feet and slaps the tag down on LaStella at home plate.
That ended up being a very big play in the ballgame. Upton would go down swinging as well. So three runs in the third for Atlanta. Mariners trailing 3-1, but then they'd play some long ball, starting with Dustin Ackley in the third.
The pitch. Swinging. This is corked to right field. This is ticketed for the seats. Goodbye. That is gone. Dustin Ackley brings the Mariners a run closer. He is on some kind of hot streak. Ackley goes deep for the seventh time this season. It's 3-2 Braves.
There was Dustin Ackley. At that point, he was 2-for-2 in the ballgame. Batting average 352 since July 1st. That's seventh best in the American League at that point when he launched that solo blast. So the Mariners creeping closer. And then they do some real damage. Hit by Seager, infield base hit by Taylor. Then Logan Morrison would launch one.
The 0-1 pitch swing, and this is clobbered high to right field. This scrapes up on top of the roof, and it's gone. A three-run homer. Logan Morrison, a slow trot here in the sunshine at Safeco Field. He has given the Mariners the lead on his sixth home run of the season. It's 5-3 Seattle.
So a big blast there. Morrison launches one. That was all about the grits, baby. Sixth home
it's
run
in the grits, baby.
Of the season. Yeah, there it is. All about the grits, baby. And then Mariners hit out on another run in the fifth inning as well. This time, Chris Taylor driving in a run.
Down the 2-0, swinging a fly ball into left field. Backing up a few steps, Bonifacio. He's there to make the catch. Tagging at third. Heading home and scoring, Robinson Cano. Sacrifice fly off the bat of Chris Taylor. And it's now the Mariners 6 and the Braves 3.
And then Chris Young, this was a very professional start for Chris Young. That was a professional pitcher out there who goes five innings and gave up three earned runs. You know, he was in some trouble in the fourth, got out of it, a runner on in the fifth, got out of it, but gave you five innings and just three runs on the board. And then you just hand the baton over to this bullpen that's just absolutely sick, and no better example than Tom Wilhelmsen and a nasty, nasty curve.
One out, one on. Mariners the lead. Here's the 0-2. Gattis stares at a nasty 75-mile-an-hour curveball. Oh, that came in with a jagged edge. It just chewed up Evan Gattis. Forget buckling the knees. That broke his knees. It's out number two.
Jagged edge. That's such a great call there as he goes down. And he wasn't alone. Also, Leon getting it done late in the ball game for the M's.
Two balls, two strikes, the pitch coming, swing and a miss, strike three. 96-mile-an-hour flames from Dominic Leon, and Justin Upton will leave Seattle with that golden sombrero. 0-4 with four punch outs, and he hasn't seen velocity like that today until that at bat.
Mariners would add another run in the seventh inning. This time Kendrys Morales would knock one in, and then on to the ninth. It's off to Medina to close this one down.
The pitch by Medina, swinging a fly ball left center field over Ackley. Dustin is there. He makes the catch, and the ball game is over. The Mariners won it 7-3 over the Atlanta Braves. They sweep the two-game series, and they sweep aside the Braves in the season series. They win all four games against Atlanta. For the Mariners, their 59th win. They go to 59-54. And how about veteran right-hander Chris Young? He wins for the 10th time this year.
So Mariners claim victory over the Braves, 7-3. They pound out 12 hits along the way, everybody getting into the act. Kyle Seager with three knocks, Ackley with two rips, had a couple of runs as well, an RBI. Cano, two more hits, ho-hum, he's up to 332 now in the season. A walk as well, he's been an on-base machine, his on-base percentage climbing near 400. Taylor a hit, he drives in a run as well. Morrison the big blast, driving in three. And of course the bullpen beyond filthy once again to close this one down. Four innings, zero earned runs once again for this nasty pen. And the Mariners claim the win 7-3.
So great win for the M's. Before we talk about what comes up next, I thought Lloyd McClendon said something very interesting before the ball game, talking to Rick Riz on the pregame show.
I feel our offense is starting to rumble a little bit. I think we got a run coming, and I feel real good about that. I feel good about the balance in the lineup. We got some professional hitters in that lineup, and I think we're going to get on a run here. And with our pitching, you know, it could be scary.
There's a lot in there. First, I love the rumbling part. That's a great way to put it, as the offense starting to rumble, but it would be scary considering how good the pitching has been. And we've talked about it, you know, after the All-Star break going 6-10, seven of those losses, one-run losses. So we're not talking about much offensively. We talked it over in the postgame show a little bit yesterday, too. You know, they're just not that far away. And with this many new pieces, Saunders coming back, you have Jackson at the top, Morales in the middle. They've turned over a third of their lineup, and you add Saunders to the mix too. That's significantly different than it was to start the year. This is not the same offense. So we'll see if they do get things rolling, if they do get things cooking. I mean, the numbers are pretty staggering. When they score 3, 4, 5 runs in a ball game, they're nearly invincible because their pitching has been that good. So if they are sitting on a run, watch out. And they're off to a really good start in this homestand, winning the first two games against the Braves. And now it's opportunity time against the White Sox. Four-game series against the White Sox. Good news already. Chris Sale pitched yesterday. You play a four-game series with the White Sox, and you do not see Sale. It's a good place to be. Of course, White Sox can say the same thing, playing a four-game series against the Mariners, and they're not going to see Felix Hernandez. But Chris Sale is outstanding, one of the best pitchers in the American League, squarely behind Felix Hernandez for the AL Cy Young Award race. But still, Sale is outstanding, really, really good. So the Mariners are going to miss him in this series. So first game, 7:10, first pitch tonight. We'll take the air at 6 o'clock for the pregame show. And here's what it looks like. Roenis Elias is going to take to the hill for the Mariners. So he will get the call. 8-9, 4-1-9 ERA. Pitched well last time out against Baltimore. Pitched into the sixth inning. Gave up one run in 5 2/3 innings. Time before that against Baltimore as well. Five innings, one earned run. Mariners on the short side of both of those ball games, just one run losses. I mean, that's what we've talked about. But he's just given up three earned runs in his last three starts, twice pitching into the sixth. And at this point, when you're watching his innings, that's not a bad place to be. Five, six innings, I think that's the expectation level right now. No need to push him further than that. He can give you that quality and then turn it over to the pen. That's just been absolutely lights out. So Elias is going to get the call against the White Sox in game one of the series. Now for Chicago, they're going to turn to Scott Carroll. The righty is 4-6 with a 4.36 ERA on the season. He gave up four earned to Minnesota the last time out. Seven innings pitched. Time before that was excellent. Gave up one run in six innings. Time before that, knocked around a little bit. 11 hits in five innings against Kansas City. Time before that, shuts out Cleveland in five innings. So he's really been riding the roller coaster. And just his last 10 starts, I mean, he gave up seven earned runs in a start to the Angels. And the next start out, he blanks Boston in 6 2/3 innings. So it's, at this point, really difficult to know exactly what you're going to get from Carroll. He's been up and down. Of course, at home, he's really struggled. A 5.71 ERA at his home ballpark. On the road, he's been much better. 3.15 ERA. Against lefties, this is where the Mariners may be able to take advantage. Lefties have hit him. He's batting, lefties batting 3.01 against him this season with five homers and 11 doubles compared to righties who are 2.69. Mariners aren't as left-handed as they have been, but that's something that the Mariners can definitely take advantage of. Also in this series, you know, bigger picture, I don't know if you can talk about a knockout blow necessarily when you're at the beginning or middle stages of August, but right now the White Sox on the fringes of the wild card race. I mean, you look at it, they're below 500, 55-60, but just six games out. Problem they have is they have to jump Tampa, Cleveland, Yankees, Mariners, Royals, and Toronto to get there. But the Mariners can really land a big blow against the White Sox in this series if they were able to take them out in three out of four, for example. They've lost a couple in a row. They absolutely got demolished two games ago by the Texas Rangers, so much so that Adam Dunn came into pitch the last inning of that ball game, which is quite a sight. Dunn, a huge behemoth of a man, on the pitch in that ball game. Very strange stuff. They lost yesterday 3-1 with Chris Sale on the hill. And they've actually lost four of their past five ball games. They lost a series to the Minnesota Twins before dropping 2 of 3 to the Texas Rangers. So in Seattle for the first of four, we'll take there at 6 o'clock for the pregame show. Should be a lot of fun. Now, I want to turn to Don Sutton here, and this is really remarkable. Don Sutton, a Hall of Famer, guy that's been broadcasting for a long, long time, and he was on hand to see Felix Hernandez, King's Court, everything else. Here's Aaron Goldsmith with Hall of Famer Don Sutton about the King.
Don, you had a chance to watch Felix Hernandez last night. King's Court was six sections strong. What did you take away from watching the King last night in Game 1?
He knows what he's doing. He's everything that he was advertised to be. It was fun watching his calmness on the mound, and I also enjoyed the rapport he seemed to have with Zunino, because I didn't see him shake off a single pitch. So obviously he knows how to work with a catcher, and he has a catcher that works with him. But I think I saw a guy last night that has been outstanding, and we may not have seen the best yet, with four pitches that he can make dart and dive and go faster and go slower. He is a complete pitcher, and I think he pitches with a quiet joy. Now, he's not one of those hoop-de-doo guys who's going to, you know, run around and do a dance every time he strikes you out. He's got people in the stands to do that for him. But I just watched a complete guy that I would love to watch more against somebody else. Yeah, he is. It was a joy to watch a pitcher who seems to take joy in being a pitcher.
You saw the 90-91 mile-an-hour changeup. Have you seen a pitch like that from anybody else ever?
I have seen an overpowering changeup before. Andy Messersmith had that, but I don't think it threw it as fast. I mean, it was a freaky pitch. And I can see, you and I were having this conversation yesterday, and I can see why people would think it was a splitter, because it just comes up there and the bottom falls out of it. But it is not a splitter, and we got some close-ups of the grip. So, no, I haven't seen anybody with a dominant pitch like that that's called a changeup.
So many people who either play with Felix or play against Felix comment on his competitiveness up on the mound. And especially last night, even some hitters from the Braves clubhouse said that once he got that lead, you could tell there was this different lockdown mentality from Felix. What were your observations of Felix with the lead and maybe ratcheting it up to even a different level?
Well, he threw a couple of fastballs when runners got on that were a little quicker than what we had seen before. He seemed to throw a couple of those changeups that had more bite. I think that there are some pitchers that are not good front runners, but I think he's a guy that 99 times out of 100, if I see him with two runs up on you, I don't think he got a chance to come back. And to me, as a pitcher, even against my team, I admire that. It was fun to watch. I love watching people who take great pride in our craft. Pitching is fun. And if you know what you're doing and it's a joyful day at the office for you, to me, those are the kind of guys that I pull for. I want them to do well. I'd like to reserve a spot in that little New York town for him.
Don, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for the time.
All right, a pleasure. Thanks. And now I'm awfully glad we don't have to see him anymore.
I just think that's pretty remarkable. And there he is alluding to it. I mean, Hall of Fame Felix Hernandez. And I've said this before. It's so strange to talk Hall of Fame to me with Felix, who has so much of his career left, just 28 years of age. Yes, he has piled up so much in his career already. And the conversation is legit. But, man, he's just got so much career left, you know, when you look at it. He can accomplish so much more, but man, it's something special to get those accolades from somebody already in the Hall of Fame. We're going to talk a little bit about Felix now as we turn to Ryan Divish. Of course, you can follow him at Ryan Divish on Twitter, writes for the Seattle Times. Also, you can see his work in one of my favorite publications, Baseball America. The Mariners blurb that's in there every week is written by Ryan Divish, and I mean, he's such a great follow on Twitter. And so here it is with Ryan Divish.
Well, you saw Felix Hernandez lock down the Cy Young Award in 2010. So tremendous that year, especially down the stretch. How do you compare what he's doing now to what he did in 2010?
I think he's even better, actually, this year than he was that year, which is, I mean, amazing. But he's pitching deeper into games. I think the strikeouts have been a little bit better, and then just the dominance that he's doing with it. He doesn't have the one bad start mixed in with four good ones. It's all good starts, and he's done it on such a consistent level. And I think the one thing that amazes me day in and day out with him is how he kind of keeps it together emotionally. You know, he doesn't get run support. They lose games they shouldn't when he's on the mound, and he never throws a teammate under the bus. He never blows up the offense for not giving him run support. I mean, all those things, I mean, they factor into it, and I think you watch what he's done this year and just kind of the brilliance that he's pitched with, it's just better. It's better.
I find myself in the same place. I never thought I would say he would have a stretch better in 2010 because he was ridiculous. But you look at it now, we're talking about a 14-game stretch that goes back to the middle of May. You know, it's not just a 5 or 6-game sample set. It is a long stretch that we're looking at.
Yeah, I mean, and he had those three kind of rough starts in May, and then after that he's been lights out. And it's just the way he's doing it. He's doing it in different ways. I think even now the curveball is so much better than it was that year in 2010. And the changeup's better. Everything is a little bit better. We're truly seeing a guy that's kind of mastered his craft and really worked himself up to this level. He's not just a thrower anymore. He's a pitcher.
There's a lot of guys in the American League, starting pitchers, having tremendous years. Where does he fit in terms of Cy Young race as we head down the final 2 months of the season?
Well, he should be leading it. If he's not, then I'd question the voter. But, I mean, guys like Scherzer and Kluber and Yu Darvish, there are some guys with some great numbers. But if you look at the overall, if you look at what he's done going into this year and what he's done so in the last few months, I don't think there's anybody that could be ahead of him in the race. I think it's his race to win. As long as he kind of pitches at a pretty good level, I can't imagine anybody passing him. He's just done so well for so long that, he has to be the favorite.
I think one of the big stories of this year, staying with the pitching theme, bullpen last year, second worst ERA in the game. This year, best ERA in baseball and one of the best ERAs in the last 30 years in terms of bullpen. What has been the difference for this bullpen this year from last year?
I honestly don't know. I mean, it's the same guys. I mean, they're the same guys that drove me insane last year, and they're that much better. I do think you start from the back end and go forward. And in having Fernando Rodney, at least a guy that you know is going to be there, and you know even after a few rough outings, nothing changes. I think with Wilhelmsen last year, after that brutal series in Cleveland, he had about three or four blown saves, and he just was never the same again. With Rodney, I mean, his demeanor after he blows one or after he gets one is pretty much the same. So I think that's been the thing. And once you have that back end guy, you can slot everybody after that. You have Farquhar in the eighth, and you know Medina. He has been better. He doesn't allow that free base runner every outing like he used to last year. And then, you know, Wilhelmsen's really found a role as the long reliever. And then not to mention, you look at Dominic Leon and how they've handled him. He's been great in multiple inning situations. And you have Brandon Mauer coming out of nowhere and looking like a completely different pitcher. And then the two lefties. I mean, Joe Bimel was an absolute steal if you think about it. He's been great. I mean, you just – nothing about this bullpen when we watched it in the spring or even on paper said it was going to be this good, but they've just performed at an unbelievable rate.
You look at this wild card run here down the stretch, so many teams in it within five games, just a handful of teams there. How do you look at this race and who's in it and where the Mariners fit into the mix?
I look at it as about five or six really flawed teams that are trying to get this last spot. I do believe that the three division leaders and then the Angels are kind of above everybody else, particularly the Angels, the A's, and the Tigers are a little bit above everybody else. Everybody else is kind of fighting for those other spots. I think we saw this weekend that the Orioles aren't quite as good as we thought they were, and you see the Blue Jays and the pitching issues that they have, some of the bullpen issues they have. I mean, it's there for the Mariners. If they can just be a mediocre offense, they could be in it with the pitching they've gotten. I mean, we know that stat, what their record is, you know, some 50 wins when they score three runs. That's what I look at. I think there's no clear favorite in this stretch, and I don't see any team that's good enough to pull away because they're all flawed in some way.
How much do you think Austin Jackson's going to help this team the last couple of months?
I think he should help them a lot defensively. If you think about this, when you're playing the number of close games the Mariners are and you have that much trouble scoring, a mistake in the outfield can cost you. And while we all love James Jones and he's a great kid, some of the struggles he had are defensively in center field, a position that's still not, you know, an everyday thing for him, were apparent. And it hurt the Mariners in some close games where he misjudged a couple fly balls. Jackson isn't going to have that problem. He's an established guy, and he's going to provide that. And then, you know, you look at the top of the order. We saw how it worked that Saturday game in Baltimore where he and Dustin Ackley got on and combined six times. Everything seemed to get a little easier. Jackson's a legitimate leadoff guy, something the Mariners really haven't had over the last few years. So I like that kind of combination of Jackson and the reinvented Dustin Ackley at the top of the order. I think that makes them a little bit more comparable. And, you know, if you can get those first five guys, Jackson, Ackley, Cano, Morales, and Seager, to do anything, you're going to have a pretty good chance.
Nine-game homestand here. Still roughly 2 months left to play. I don't know if you can label a series big or not or homestand big or not. How significant is this homestand right here for the Mariners?
I think it's huge because if you look at the way they played at home, if you have nine games, three of them against the team in the Blue Jays that you're competing directly with, if you don't play well, you could push yourself out of this real quickly. And I think they'll be better, but they've still got to figure out a way to be a little bit better at home and score some runs. They just can't seem to kind of put it all together at home. It's I think it aggravates Lloyd. I mean, you think about all these road trips where they've come off the road and they're 7-8 games over 500 and they come home and they play poorly at home. I think it drives fans crazy. It drives Lloyd crazy, and I don't understand it. I mean, I know the issues of hitting at Safeco Field and some of the stigma about it, but this isn't a team that hits a bunch of home runs anyway, so they should be able to find ways to score runs and really, they just need to execute better at home. They haven't been very good situational hitting at home either. Whether it's moving runners, you know, hitting behind a runner, or even getting that fly ball with a runner on third less than two outs, they've been pretty poor at home.
You know, it's crazy. Last time I did the math, I think they were middle of the pack in terms of road runs scored, about 4.5 a ball game. If they were able to stretch that out and be that consistent at home, it'd be in business.
Yeah, it's amazing. You look at the numbers, and they're so drastic. And you know, and I know there is a stigma for some of these guys to hit here, but at the same time, you know, some of the things that they can control, like I said, the situational hitting, they don't do that either. I mean, it's not just home runs in that regard. They have to be better. You know, I mean, Mariners fans just cringe every time, you know, you write out, you know, stranded a runner at third with less than two outs. You know, they're famous for it, and they have to be better about it.
Do you feel you write better on the road or at home? Are you good no matter where you are?
No, you know, I feel like I'm better at home. I really do. Although the deadlines are a lot tougher. So maybe on the East Coast I write a little bit better, but then you're dealing with a lack of sleep from being on the East Coast. I don't get it. I mean, I understand why in some parts you do hit better. Yeah. I mean, you go to Camden Yards and it's warm and muggy and the ball carries there, and sure, you're going to have a little bit more confidence as well. I mean, you know, the physics of it say that, but you know, like I said, there is no reason they can't be at least average at home if they can't be above average.
What's your favorite city to visit?
that's tough. You know, while we always love going to San Diego for obvious reasons, the weather's mild, you got beaches, they got the stadium's right downtown, so you can just walk there. That's probably one of my favorites. Enjoy Boston just because Boston's got great energy. You know, it's weird what you like about certain cities and what you don't. You know, you rate it on the press box, you rate it about proximity to the stadium, things like that. Uh-huh. I think, in general, Oakland finishes last in just about every category.
I know how that goes. Rating systems for airports,
yeah,
though, which
exactly.
Always play a big key.
Yeah,
I know what you're saying.
That's the shortest flight, too. Oakland should be one of our favorites. It's the shortest flight we make, but it's still, there's nothing enjoyable about it.
Well, thanks for the time. We appreciate it.
There it is, Ryan Divish from the Seattle Times. You can follow him at Ryan Divish on Twitter. Now, this is the participation portion of the program. I'm going to unleash what I've been working on for this weekend. As Lou Week continues here on the podcast, this is the montage that's going to be played this weekend. I may still tweak it. We'll see. But you can always volley in your thoughts at Gary Hill Jr. or you can email me, GaryHillPXP@gmail.com. So here it is, Lou Piniella going into the Hall of Fame, the Mariners Hall of Fame on Saturday. And this was actually tough to put together when you think about all the great moments, the funny moments, the dramatic moments, the tremendous moments, and all the people that have such great stories about Lou Piniella. So here it is. This is how we'll end things today with your Lou Piniella montage as he goes into the Mariners Hall of Fame.
And now, the starting lineup, as announced by new Mariner manager, number 14, Lou Piniella.
It's a ball club that's not too far away from really putting a viable product on the field that everybody in the Seattle and the Northwest can be proud of. Winning is an attitude, just like losing is. And what we plan to do here as a staff is to bring that winning attitude.
And the 0-1 pitch on the way to Edgar Martinez. Swung on and lined down the left field line for a base hit. Here comes Joe.
It was a heck of a lot of fun, I can tell you that. It was a season where
baseball in Seattle is going to be saved. A season where they'll get a new stadium here. It's a season where this city here has proven that it can be a great baseball city. It's a city that it's a season that this team here started to establish its own winning tradition for the first time that we can build on.
The most successful manager for the Mariners, four trips to the playoffs, you know, as a player, you loved playing for him, you know, so many guys that have played for him feel that way, just the amount of respect that he demanded from you. He demanded your best every single day, wanted to win worse than anybody sitting in the stands. I mean, he wanted to win, wanted to win as many games as he could, I tell you what, he managed that way, we all had it. I mean, let's be honest, we got a kick out of him from time to time when he'd run out there and argue, but... you know, very deserving of that honor, for sure.
Mr. Steinbrenner told me two things. One, your main job is to win. But your second job, and almost as important, is to help put fannies in the seats. So he says, when you argue with an umpire and you get kicked out of a game, put on a good show. Well, I took it to heart.
And he's going to pick up the first base bag. And there it goes, down the right field line.
Don't throw it again, Lou.
Don't kick that, Lou. You'll break your toe. Lou's going to pick it up and throw it farther down the right field line into fair territory.
And he said, let me ask you a question, Lou. He said, did you ever go to college? I said, I sure did. He says, well, didn't you learn in college you don't end a sentence with a preposition? I said, well, let me ask you something, Durwood. Can I rephrase the question? And he says, you sure can. I said, where were those pitches at, Durwood? You no good blind boo 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 bump. And I was having a beer in the clubhouse real quick.
He was not going to get outmanaged. There was no way. Never did I see Lou ever get outmanaged. The guy was... most prepared guy I've ever seen.
There's a bunt up the first baseline. The Mariners are on their way to the American League Championship. A beautiful bunt by Carlos Guillen. The Mariners sweep the Chicago White Sox.
I've never had a manager quite like him that had, you know, the fire that he had for winning, the caring that he had for each one of his players and family members. And being prepared day in and day out.
Lou may get tossed right here.
Oh, I don't know, sir.
I think that if you go out and you play every day for him and you keep the excuses to a minimum, but he can depend on you, he will always be there for you.
Here comes Lou Piniella.
Let me just interject one thing. We're going to be back here to play game six, okay? I told the people outside the same thing. We're going to be back here to play game six.
Lou tips his hat to the crowd saying, hey, I'm not going to take him out. He's still my guy.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's great showmanship.
Bang! And a foul tip into the glove of Dan Wilson, who hangs on to it. And no baseball team in history has ever won more games than the Seattle Mariners.
2001 team was just a special team. These guys could play.
And Lou Piniella takes the flag and raises it higher as he can get it, and takes his hat off. What a moment this is. My, oh, my.
I was here a long time, and I really enjoyed it. Wonderful fans, wonderful city. The people that I worked with and for, up in the front office, the ownership group, the players. We had a nice situation here for a long time.